You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy.
Now bringing you... He sat in my chair. I don't like that. Dr. History.
I won't do it again, I promise.
You better not ever sit in that chair again.
I've learned my lesson.
Okay.
Hey, sunny day out there, no wind, it's up to 46 degrees.
I wonder when it's going to crash.
You're right.
Oh, my. How are you?
I'm doing great. So, folks, I haven't mentioned this for a while, but you are considered underprivileged if you have not read my book. And I haven't mentioned this for a while.
You haven't. We should have, though.
Yeah. Coal Miner to Cowboy by Ken Turner. You can get it on Amazon. It's an ebook and Audible and in print on Amazon. Or if you live here, you can go to Stokes or A Child's World or out to Declo at the country store. So, folks, if you want to not be underprivileged, you need to get my book.
And right over your shoulder, right over your right shoulder, is your book on my bookstand. It's an excellent book. You did a great job, and I'm proud to know you.
Thank you, Zev.
You're welcome.
A fun project.
You're welcome.
So I'm going to talk about the riverboats. We've talked a number of times about those. This is a story about a guy who had not exactly a great experience on a riverboat. And
are we talking on the Mississippi River?
Missouri.
Oh, on the Missouri.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there were two types of steamboats that come into use on the Missouri. You know, they called that the Big Muddy. They said too thin to plow and too thick to drink. Missouri. That's why they called it the Big Muddy.
Okay.
So, but they had the big boats that could operate on the lower river and on the Mississippi. And then they had what they called the mountain boats, which could go up farther on with less water. But they couldn't carry as much. So some of the big boats did make it all the way up to Fort Benton, which was near the gold fields. You know, that's as far as they could go.
Okay, Fort Benton where?
In Montana.
Yeah, I know, but where close to?
You know, it's kind of northwestern part of Montana.
Oh.
So up. Kind of up towards when you get up to Virginia City, Nevada City, Anaconda, those places.
Okay.
So right up in that direction. But some of the big boats did make it up there, and they could, you know, the gold boom was going strong. They could charge as much as $300 for a passenger and $15 a 100-pound for all the cargo that would be heading down to the lower Mississippi.
How long a trip was it?
Oh, two or three months.
You're on that boat for 2 or 3 months.
Yeah,
for $300.
Well, going down not as bad. Going up, it took quite a while.
Wow.
Yeah, but hopefully you had a good pilot. Now the pilot was the guy that knew where the sandbars were. He was the one that you were hoping.
You'd want to hire him.
Yes. And, of course, the captain, he listened to the pilot and would say, okay, go this way, go that way. So, but, you know, no travelers in the history of the river endured so bad and miserable a voyage or were victimized by rascality.
Wait a minute. Time out.
Rascality.
I got to look that up. Is that really a word, rascality?
Oh, it's right here. Rascality and ineptitude. Okay? Nobody was the victims more than these 275 unwary people who headed downstream for St. Louis on a big stern wheeler called the Imperial. And this is in September of 1867. Okay, now keep that in mind. September, we're getting into fall.
Yeah.
All right.
Rascality.
So, rascality. Yes. You're going to use that over and over now.
I'm going to use it, man. It's mine.
Okay. So Imperial's crew had been unable to get her beyond a place called Cow Island. Now, this is 198 miles below Fort Benton. So they didn't even make it up to the fort. But her captain was determined that they was going to get some passengers on board. So he sent some men up to Fort Benton, and he was going to charge them $130 apiece in gold dust per passenger. Mm. And so he had these guys go up there and try to get passengers to come and go on his boat.
Okay.
So they were pretty persuasive. Here's what's interesting, Zeb. There were three nice steamboats right there at Fort Benton that they could have gotten on and made the trip.
Right.
But I guess because of a cheaper price, they decided, okay, we'll go down and get on this other boat, the Imperial. And the salesman, so to speak, they described the Imperial as a floating palace. So the salesman told the people that those three big steamers were just not worth it. They were mud scows, he called them.
Mud scows.
So they offered free transportation to take people down in these open boats called Mackinaws down 198 miles to Cow Island, where they would get on the Imperial. Okay. And they said, you will have a jolly good crowd and a royal good time.
Really? Right?
They were good salesmen. So I'm going to take this from a young prospector named John Napton. This is his story. Now, he'd come down to Fort Benton on a horse with $1,000 in gold dust from his diggings near a place called Bear Gulch. And he was one of 275 passengers who paid the price and eventually found themselves sleeping, quote, thick as sardines in a box on the overloaded Imperial's cabin floor. So they weren't in cabins on beds. And now I figured this out, and the 275 passengers would have come to $37,750 for the owner of the boat.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay.
So they headed downstream without a pilot.
Wait a minute. This doesn't bode well.
The pilot is the guy that watches out for sandbars.
Sandbars, yeah.
They headed downstream without a pilot. They went to ground on 132 separate sandbars and spent more than 2 months on the river before finally being abandoned 1,000 miles from St. Louis. So Napton, like I said, he tells the story. He said, I was faring much better than I had, according to sleeping on the boat, than I had when I was a minor. But he soon began changing his mind. He said a deckhand's leg was broken by a cable, which snapped as the Imperial was being pulled off a sandbar. The man eventually died for lack of medical attention. Now, you can imagine, Zeb, at this point, the captain is growing a little bit unpopular. Day by day.
Yeah.
But if only because he decided that he could not free the Imperial from sandbars if the passengers did not wade around in freezing water beside the boat and shift sand by dragging a long chain under her hull. So get the picture. He's got all the passengers out in the water pushing and pulling and moving sand to get them off the sandbar.
Why didn't they treat him like Captain Ahab and over he goes?
That's a good question. We're going to talk a little bit about that.
I see.
That. Okay. So as their situation got worse, when the steamboat called the Benton, one of the three, what the salesman had said were mudscows, tied up nearby after coming down river with the full steam on and running like a racehorse. And this is the one they could have gotten on up at Fort Benton, but
yeah,
they didn't. So the Imperial's captain refused to return passage money to 15 people who decided wisely to transfer to this other vessel. Okay, they were the smart ones. And he declined to pay the $1,000 fee, which the Benton's second pilot, they had two pilots on this other boat.
The good boat.
The good boat.
The good ship Lollipop.
The good, yeah. They had two pilots, and one of them offered to pilot him down the river.
Okay.
But he wasn't going to pay the $1,000 to help him get down the river.
Wow.
Well, this caused a little bit of criticism when the captain set out. He thought he'd just follow this other boat.
I would have said that.
And stay in the wake.
Yep.
And it landed on another sandbar, not very far downriver.
So the captain of the bad boat hit another sandbar.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And they just watched as this another steamboat just kept on sailing down the river.
And the first boat, the good boat, the Lollipop, on going.
Oh, he was hit.
Why didn't they turn around?
And go back up?
And help him?
Well, they offered, you know, but the captain didn't. He didn't want any help.
Okay.
So, the Neptune's captain, he, you know, again, he wasn't real popular at this time. And after the Benton left us, here's what Napton said, the guy that's on. He said, after the Benton, the steamboat, the good one, left us, we passengers realized our situation and that some vigorous plan must be adopted. The last boat above us had passed, winter was coming on, and provisions were getting low.
Uh-oh.
Now, you might be thinking mutiny at this time.
I was.
We organized and had regular meetings, chairman chosen, and committee appointed to see that our resolutions were enforced. One of them, everyone except the women and children, of whom there were some six or eight, got off the boat in order to lighten it whenever we got stuck on a sandbar and to also pull on a hawser stretched from the boat to the land. It was the strength of 200 men who all pulled together. Notwithstanding these plans, we were only making but little headway. Some days 4 or 5 miles, sometimes 48 hours on the same sandbar. Can you imagine? They were stuck on a sandbar for as long as 48 hours.
What about the women and children? Where were they housed?
Well, they were just up on the deck. As a last resort, he said, we concluded to cut away the upper deck of the boat and cash on shore all the freight, which consisted of bales of furs and buffalo hides stowed in the hold of the boat. So now he's getting rid of all the cargo.
Yeah, well, what about the food?
Well, we're going to talk about that.
Oh.
The captain made us a speech and told us that if we would help a few more days, we would reach Fort Buford at the mouth of the Yellowstone Stone River, where we could get an ample supply of provisions. And since the Yellowstone was almost as large a stream as the Missouri and would bring up the river level, our troubles would be over.
I see.
Not to be. So he continues, this Napton, John Napton, he said, we're going along and a huge herd of buffalo began crossing the river just below the vessel. So he said everybody was eager for the chase. Now, at this point, they didn't have a lot of food. So they lowered the two lifeboats, and they were soon full of men and on their way down the river. And several concluded to go by land, and among them was the boat's hunter. Each boat had a hunter to try to get food for them.
I see.
Well, the hunter and another guy, they were out walking, and they decided to split up. And anyway, the hunter came back and found the guy he was walking with full of arrows.
This doesn't bode well.
No.
No.
And so they were a little nervous about Indians, and there was a little confusion among the hunters. And anyway, they went and retrieved the body the next day.
But and they, so there was 150 people still on the boat.
Well, yeah, because there was just a number of hunters that got off to get buffalo meat.
Holy mackerel.
So the Imperial, for all the captain's assurances, did not get past the Yellowstone, and now it's late October.
Oh, that long?
Yeah.
Oh,
and they started in September, so they're, what, a month out now, and really haven't made it very far.
Ooh.
So more than a month into the journey, and they made slower progress than ever, and the captain, for whatever reason, kept blowing the whistle as a signal of distress, hoping that someone somewhere would come to their relief. Which seems like an odd thing to do.
Yeah.
So John Napton keeps going. He says, we now landed each day at some bullberry patch to give us all a full feed, since the last food cooked on the boat in those starvation days was a barrel of currants with very small white worms in them.
They did it again, folks, right close to the lunch hour.
You love it when I do that.
Yes, I do.
They were served as long as they lasted, and no remarks were made. Because they were eating, okay, a little protein in there. So there was an old man who generally sat at the head of the long dining table, would give us a discourse on hard times in about the following style. Quote, well, boys, this looks a little bad, but it might be worse. I landed in the Salt Lake Basin in 46 and lived without flour for 6 months, and it never worried me. This river is lined with bullberries and rosebush balls, and they are both good.
You want to say that again?
No. And you must remember, our friend, on the lower deck, has two horses. A little thin, I must confess, but there is no better meat than horse flesh. And I have also noticed several dogs aboard.
He sounds like a real good salesman.
Well, Napton continues the story. He said he found a fellow with better advice. Quote, a man named Pitcher from St. Louis, who always came out in the morning with a broad smile and apparently satisfied with the situation and with everybody. I said to him one day, Pitcher, how is it you seem so well contented? I never hear any complaint from you. He answered, to tell you the truth, John, I have had bread all the time, and if you will properly approach the steward and at the right time, you can get bread too, but it will cost you something.
Uh-oh.
So Napton says, this I immediately did. The steward, realizing the situation, had cooked up a lot of bread. How much, I never found out. He had taken off some of the weatherboarding and stowed the bread away in the side of the cook room and was selling it to passengers. He handed me a loaf that in any bakery could be bought for 5 cents and would only charge me $5.
$5.
For a loaf of bread.
Ooh.
But then, where could I eat it? He said to himself. Because he didn't want the other passengers to see him.
Absolutely not.
So he said, I hid under some blankets, and that's where I ate it, even though it was only 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So he hid under a blanket, ate his bread. So here we are. He continues his story. On the 1st of November, now we're into September,
now,
October,
wait
November.
A minute. It's got to be cold.
We were about where the city of Bismarck is now located and where Lewis and Clark wintered with the Mandans. It was a cold, disagreeable day. The boat tied up and some of us walked to the top of adjoining bluffs to take a look at the surrounding country. It was one vast, boundless plain ending in every direction. One of the men said, quote, look at the ice floating in the river. I tell you right now, fellows, we are in a heck of a fix.
And I can imagine that's exactly the words.
That's what it says right here.
Yeah.
Not long afterward, Napton spotted an old Mackinac on a small island in the middle of the river. Again, this is kind of like a big rowboat, okay,
yeah.
A Mackinac.
Yeah.
He asked the captain to stop the steamer so they could take a look at this Mackinac's condition. The captain refused, and the Imperial made another 10 miles before tying up for the night. Well, Napton was not discouraged. Early the next morning, he and five other men went ashore and walked back toward where the abandoned boat was, and they took an axe, two oars, and some rope. And here's what he said. The river was 3/4 mile wide, and to us left on the bank, they found the boat buried in 4 or 5 feet of sand, mud, and driftwood, and dug it with the oars and the axe. While they were working at the boat, we saw Indians coming over the bluff on the opposite side from us, until there must have been about 300 of them.
Oh, my.
They shouted and made all manner of signs with their blankets, but would not venture in the river. And I was never more relieved in my life than one of the men said that the boat was ready to go. We jumped into the boat. We went down to the Imperial and bade our friends goodbye. They just sailed right on past the Imperial.
They went by?
Yeah. Well, they were in something that was going to float and not get stuck on sandbars.
So they left all those other people just standing there.
Well, let me keep. We're still.
Well, hurry up.
Okay, I know we're almost out of time. Okay, quote. Sometime during the night, first night after we left her, two more boats came down upon us at full speed in the moonlight. They were passengers who had stolen both the lifeboats. Leaving her crew in a helpless condition, as these boats were needed every day in hunting for the channel of the river. They could make better time than we could and soon disappeared downstream. There were 12 of us in the Mackinac, and 4 of us worked the oars all the time. We traveled all day and all night when not too dark, and one day when the wind was favorable, we hoisted our blankets for sails, and we thought we made fully 100 miles. We hired horse wagons at Yankton to take us to Sioux City, took a stage to St. Joe, and arrived at Boonville, Missouri, exactly 3 months after leaving Bear Gulch, Montana.
Oh, my good. What happened to the crew?
The Imperial eventually reached a point 150 miles from Sioux City where the passengers were put ashore without refunds, and the boat was later sold at public auction.
Wow.
So,
you know, the word patience comes to mind. I wouldn't have had any.
Now, the story goes on to say that really most captains were much better. They took care of their passengers as far as food, safety.
Wow.
They had pilots to know where the sandbars were. And still, there were explosions. There were.
Yeah.
They'd still get hung up on sandbars.
The rascality of it all.
The rascality of it all. And the ineptitude.
Yes. I love it. Dr. History, you did it again.